They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Are U.S. sanctions driving inflation in Iran? I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is the Marketplace Midday Update for Wednesday, October 3rd. Coming up, more on today's riots over out-of-control prices in Tehran and the implications of a merger for T-Mobile, and also on this day of the first presidential election, conversations with the current and former governors of that most swinging of states, Ohio.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Today, police in Tehran fought with money changers and other protesters in front of Iran's central bank. Inflation in Iran is running at a shocking clip. The Iranian rial has lost 25% of its value against the dollar in just the past week. And there's lots of blame to go around, including some directed at the U.S. Mohsen Asghari is a reporter for the BBC in Tehran. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Give me a sense of just how severe an effect the inflation is having there.
We are talking about the daily life of the people, because every day they witness that in the market, the price of goods and also services are going up minute by minute. And every day they have new prices when they are going to supermarkets and when they go for shopping. People are more worried about the future, and they do not know to what extent this is going to go ahead.
Now, who is to blame, or what is to blame, is very much in the eye of the beholder. I know that. But run down the list of possible culprits for me.
Two groups in Iran have different angle of vision. For example, yesterday, Mr. Ahmadinejad said that this is a psychological warfare launched by Iran's enemy inside and outside the country, that this is an effect of sanctions. But there are some who believe that the problem that we are tolerating these days is because of the wrong policies and mismanagement of the government, and blame the situation on Mr. Ahmadinejad.
So as people get increasingly frustrated with the increasing prices they're seeing, what's the worry for the government there?
If the government doesn't believe in the fact that this is an economic problem, it cannot look for economic solutions. Ahmadinejad has repeatedly asked people not to buy foreign things, not to buy luxurious things, do not try to turn their money to dollar or some other things. But the real life is very different. The power of rial is melting down like a snowball in a hell. That's why they are trying to make a more stable future for themselves, and they want to change their money into things like dollar, like gold, like even luxurious cars. They are trying to turn the rial to some more stable things in Tehran.
Reporter Mohsen Asghari in Tehran, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Kind of a quiet start on Wall Street turned into some more significant optimism at this early hour anyway. The Dow Industrial Average is up about 0.33%. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 up around 0.5%, both of them. The Mortgage Bankers Association says applications for home mortgages surged last week. Interest rates are at record lows, thanks in part to the Federal Reserve's latest stimulus operations. And data from the payroll processing company ADP says private employers added 162,000 jobs last month. Still kind of slow, but more than economists had expected. And finally here, more fun with the iPhone 5. Apple is telling people not to worry that the iPhone 5's camera tends to take light sources like lamps or the sun and make them purple when you take photos. In a letter to a customer who then sent that letter, of course, to the tech blog Gizmodo, Apple says the purple tint is, quote, normal behavior, and to avoid the issue, the customer should just avoid taking pictures of light sources. Problem solved. Well, half of tonight's presidential debate will focus directly on the domestic economy, and you can hardly have that conversation these days without talking about energy policy. To a large extent, our American angst about gas and oil prices dates back to an October event 39 years ago, the OPEC oil embargo. Since then, politicians have pledged never again. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Scott Tong.
The president has promised,
"We will finally end our dependence on oil from the Middle East."
Romney advisor and oilman Harold Hamm complains,
"For far too long, we stood under OPEC dominance."
In October 1973, the U.S. sent weapons to Israel during an Arab-Israeli conflict.
Good evening.
TV anchors told us that Arab producers had cut the U.S. off.
They will reduce oil production.
Gas prices soared. The U.S. economy fell into recession. The thing is, didn't work out well for OPEC either, says energy consultant Robin Mills in Dubai.
They were gaining the reputation of being unreliable suppliers.
The world started to go around OPEC and finding oil elsewhere.
Whether it's in the Caspian, West Africa, and of course in these days back in the U.S.
So today, it's OPEC producers like the Saudis who are the ones saying never again to 1973. Industry veteran Michael Herberg is now with the National Bureau of Asian Research.
They are very careful to consistently say, oil is a commercial business for us. We do not use it in political ways.
Yet the OPEC boogeyman remains a winning line for American politicians. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
America's struggling fourth-place wireless company, T-Mobile, says today it has finally reached a merger deal, but not with one of the big guys. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
T-Mobile is joining forces with MetroPCS. Wait, who? It's a no-contract prepaid phone company, says Carl Howe at the Yankee Group. Has about 9 million users.
Serves a somewhat different demographic, typically lower income, but nonetheless, it's the fast-growing part of the market today.
T-Mobile gets more customers and coverage. Its parent company, a German firm, gets to unload its American business, something it's long wanted to do. And U.S. communications regulators get a deal they can live with. So instead of the biggest of the big guys, AT&T or Verizon, swallowing T-Mobile,
we're getting a combined carrier that's still a little smaller than number three Sprint.
Yes, there will be four. That makes a difference for price competition, especially since T-Mobile is known as the cheapest of the four. Howe says T-Mobile's likely to grow by catering to customers who care more about low bills than brand new apps. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
We all get to watch tonight's first presidential debate, but to some extent, the candidates are speaking to a much smaller group of us, folks who live in the so-called swing states that will tilt the Electoral College and determine a winner. Maybe the swingingest of swing states is Ohio, which regularly oscillates between the parties and has gone the way of the winner in every presidential election since 1964. My Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson is camped out in Ohio this week. And among other things, he got a read on the election and on politics in Ohio and the economy from both the current and former governors. First up, here's Jeremy with Republican Governor John Kasich.
How much credit do you take for Ohio's economic recovery over these last couple of years?
Well, you know, look, what we've been able to do here is provide certainty to businesses. We have a balanced budget. We have a healthy rainy day fund. We've reduced taxes, and our regulatory environment is good. And I think all those things together are very helpful. But Ohio naturally should be doing well, in my opinion, and we're starting to see improvements. In terms of my taking credit, you know, my father used to say self-praise stinks. Now, largely, I've ignored that, but, you know, I'm trying to do better at that.
Well, we spoke with your predecessor, Governor Strickland, and he said that the recovery started before you took office and that the unemployment rate actually came down by more than a point before you took office.
I don't have any comment about, you know, the person that was in before me. I just don't have any comment about that.
Where do you want to take this state economically? Do you think there's an industry that is going
to... I want to take it up. No, there's no one particular industry. It's the ability of Ohio to develop diversified industries. We're located within 600 miles of 60% of the country. We are very big in financial services. We are on the cusp of real significant gains in the area of energy. When you take a look at our medical corridor, everything from the Cleveland Clinic to Case to university hospitals, to Ohio State, to the University of Cincinnati, to our children's hospitals. We are a very diversified state, and we don't want to put our eggs in one basket.
Why are the folks here in Ohio always so divided about who they want to lead them, whether it's Republican or Democrat? It always seems to be a kind of a 50-50 state.
Well, I think, you know, to some degree, we're really kind of a microcosm of the country. You know, if you want to find out how the country thinks, you come to Ohio and you get the rural and suburban and urban. And, you know, I think as a state, we basically kind of lean Republican. But, you know, it's always up for grabs.
Governor John Kasich, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, sir. Very much. I enjoyed it.
Jeremy also talked with the Democrat that Kasich defeated in 2010. So here's Jeremy once again, this time with former governor of Ohio, Ted Strickland.
Well, so why is Ohio such a divided state? What is it that is at play that makes the electorate just so undecided about who they should pick?
Well, I'm fond of saying that if you were to shrink America, you would end up with Ohio. Because we have large cities, we have, you know, an industrial economy, but agriculture is our largest single industry. We've got the Appalachian area in the south and southeast. We've got ethnic, religious, cultural, racial, economic diversity. So we are a very diverse state, and I think because of that, no politician and no political party can ever take Ohio for granted.
Well, so what do you have to do to get over the top, to get above 50% in Ohio?
Well, you've got to work really hard. You've got to not take Ohio and Ohioans for granted. But I think in this election year, you've got to talk about the things that really matter to the lives of Ohioans. The economy, certainly, opportunity, the shrinking of the middle class. All of those issues are really, I think, important and on the minds of Ohioans.
So you left office last year. Why do you think Ohioans voted you out?
Well, the economy was really, really bad. I never felt that Ohioans turned against me in any personal way, and I had no bitterness when I, you know, when I lost. But let me say to you that Ohio is experiencing an economic rebound, and that rebound, I'm proud to say, started before I left office, and that has continued in large part, I believe, because of what the president did in saving the American auto industry. That's hugely important in Ohio. But the Recovery Act that some people like to say was a failure, it was not a failure, I can tell you as governor. So we are on our way out of the recession in large part, I think, because of what the president has done.
Now, some people look at Ohio's economy right now and they give some credit to the current governor, the Republican, John Kasich. How are voters supposed to determine whether what you're saying, which is that the recovery started with you and that therefore you deserve the credit, versus that the idea that, that it belongs to the current governor?
Well, I didn't say I deserve the credit. I said the president deserved the credit. And you can just look at the data. My last year in office in 2010, unemployment in Ohio went down 1.6%. So it's obvious that the recovery was well underway before the current governor became the governor.
Ted Strickland, former governor of Ohio, Democrat, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, and you have a great day.
And just a couple stories about wildlife, I guess, that caught my eye this morning as we wrap up here. It's been a big week for people riding on sea creatures and vice versa. First, if you haven't seen this yet, there was this hugely circulated photo of three women being embraced from behind by a stingray that appears to have climbed out of the water in the Cayman Islands. If you've not seen that, check it out. And now today we notice the Florida woman who was caught on camera riding a manatee. Now, if you're swimming in Florida and you see a manatee, it's really not complicated. There's really just one rule that you've got to remember. Don't ride it. Her close encounter with nature could land her a misdemeanor for violating the Florida Manatee Sanctuary Act. And finally, in Washington, it is man versus mountain goat at Olympic National Park. The weapons of choice, sharp pointy horns, of course, and paintball guns. Hikers reported aggressive mountain goats this summer, and so the Forest Service closed a popular trail and sent biologists out to scare the herds into a more distant relationship with the humans. According to King 5 TV, that involved chemical repellents and shooting the mountain goats with paintballs. So the trail just reopened. Rangers do not recommend carrying your own paintball gun, but if you are charged by an aggressive mountain goat, you are supposed to yell really loud. which should, I think, probably come naturally. Well, that's it for the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for today. I'm Jeff Horwich. We'll come to you from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.